So what do you think of when you think of the word greed or greedy? What kind of images spring to your mind? So for me, when I think of the word greed and greedy, the image that pops into my head is sort of like a Spectator magazine cartoon of sort of a big fat businessman smoking the finest cigars, swilling expensive whiskey with kind of the world at his fingertips and the poor crushed underneath his feet. Have you ever seen those kind of cartoons that you get in newspapers? So I imagine these kind of wide arms just pulling everything into them, kind of mine, mine, more food, more money, more bling. And the parable that we read about today is a warning from Jesus to be on our guard against all kinds of greed. All kinds of greed. And it got me thinking, what are the different types of greed? What does greed look like? Because if we read this passage and the examples which are given of greed, I don't think that they actually look like my cartoon image of greed at all. I think that if we explore the story, the sort of greed that is described is a lot more ordinary. And worryingly, it looks a lot more like something which I probably do fall foul of on a regular basis. So for starters, if we look at what triggered the parable, the reason Jesus told the story in the first place, he was busy teaching, and then a person in the crowd suddenly called out to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Oh my word, how unbelievably greedy. How could this person even ask something like this? How dare they want a share of the inheritance alongside their brother? It doesn't sound particularly unreasonable, though, does it? I mean, the law of Moses did say, you know, that that was what operated at the time, and it did have this thing where it instructed that elder brothers got a bigger share of the inheritance than a younger brother. So perhaps this person was asking for a more equitable share, or perhaps the brother was not planning on giving him even that much, and he wanted Jesus to kind of weigh in and put pressure on his brother to share it with him. But Jesus discerned an attitude in the man's heart and in this request, which prompted him not only to refuse to take the man's side or arbitrate this inheritance dispute, but to warn against greed. "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And then, as we move on to the story of the rich man, which he then told, we see again something which is not obviously unreasonable. You know, I think if this was today and a true story, then this rich man would be congratulated by our society and our culture. He would be hailed as a hard-working man who earned his wealth and who makes wise business decisions. We would say that he deserves his creature comforts and the finer things in life because he has worked hard for them. Now, you know, we don't know in the story whether the man inherited the farm or was a self-made man, but either way, he is running a very productive farm and investing wisely to grow his business and increase his capacity. What is so wrong with that? How does this look like greed? If someone works really hard and earns enough to be able to retire at 30 and put their feet up, our culture would call him an inspiration. But Jesus calls this rich man a fool. What is going on? Why is Jesus taking issue with the man in the crowd and the man from his story? Now, I think we need to recognize here how radically countercultural Jesus is. How his teachings really do turn the world upside down and challenge us to see things differently and to live differently as a result. God's economy is completely different from the economy of the world around us. What is valuable in the world's eyes is not always valuable in God's eyes. And that which is valuable in God's eyes is not always of value in the world's eyes. So in the economy of the world, we work so hard to build our own little kingdoms. We work for the essentials in life, food and clothing and shelter. And then we might earn a little bit more and have enough for little luxuries, perhaps meals out or cinema trips. And then maybe we can have some slightly bigger luxuries, a new car or a trip abroad. And don't get me wrong, I am not saying that any of these things are necessarily bad. I'm just highlighting that this is the economy of the world. But the economy of the world is different from God's economy. The priorities the economy of the world gives us are different from the priorities God gives us in his economy. The rich man is labeled a fool because he has focused his energy and some level of anxiety on safeguarding his future and providing himself with a comfortable life in which to eat, drink, and be merry. He is labeled a fool because the punchline of this story is that at the end of all of that worry, the anxiety about what to do to protect his goods and safeguard his comfortable future, after all that, it will come to nothing. You fool. This very night your life will be demanded of you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? As the popular phrase goes, you can't take it with you. Now, perhaps we might argue that the rich man may have children who would be able to inherit and use the wealth. But the beginning of the passage gives a glimpse of what that future might look like. Broken relationships between siblings over who gets what. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. So the economy of the world may tell us that it is good to spend our time building our own little kingdoms, working so that we can have the finer things and live a comfortable life. The advertising world is built on this, designed to persuade us of the many things that we need. I don't know about you, but I am always amazed by how little I need until I arrive at the shopping centre, at which point I suddenly discover a million and one things that I could really do with having, actually. It's there. Advertising works. But Jesus says that the economy of the world is false, that it will all come to nothing in the end. As he says, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. So I don't think that the kind of greed Jesus is talking about here is always easy to identify. I think greed can be very subtle. I think it can slowly creep in. It isn't obviously wrong or bad. Sometimes it can look like good intentions or just wanting what is right and fair. It can be just taking care of what I've earned. It can even be making prudent decisions to make sure that I can live well as I get older. Now, don't hear me wrong here. I'm not saying that we should all not have pension plans and not work to make sure that we are looked after and have the essentials. That's not what this is about. But the kind of greed Jesus is talking about is the attitude which focuses the mind on me and mine. It puts the priority on my possessions and my comfort. It is the attitude which the economy of the world feeds with kind of portrayals of glamorous lifestyles and messages like, because you're worth it. It seduces us with, you deserve this. You are owed this. You've earned this. But actually, this is a blinkered way of thinking, a way which ignores the people around us and those further away. It takes no notice of their needs. But Jesus shows us God's economy, and it looks very different from this. God's economy says that people are precious, that yes, you are worth it. You are so worth it that you are worth dying for. But that each and every person is equally worth it. That we need to guard ourselves against getting swept up in the quest for more stuff for me. Remind ourselves that a person's value cannot be counted or measured by counting up their valuables. Because we even use that language sometimes in the world, don't we? We ask that question, oh, so how much is he worth? I had a look at the Sunday Times rich list, which has kind of a little table where it has rank, name, net worth written out all neatly on it. But this is not just about the greed of the super rich. We like to pretend that it is because then we can believe it doesn't apply to us. But this is about all kinds of greed. We do need to check our hearts and see where that culture of me first and mine take hold. Where are we living under the priorities of the world's economy rather than the priorities of God's economy? And you know what? Shifting to God's economy can be incredibly freeing. The teaching that Jesus moves on to directly after this passage, if you look it up, is all about do not worry. It says, do not worry because God knows your needs and God will care for you. The rich man was worried about what he was going to do to protect all his extra crops. His wealth didn't bring him freedom from anxiety. If anything, it increased it. But when we hold our possessions lightly, rather than clinging to them fearfully, there's actually a great release. How much do we really need? What are the essentials? There are some. This isn't about having nothing. But what are the essentials? And what if that rich man in the story had decided to use his extra crops to help those around him who may not have had so much? He would still have had plenty for himself, but would have been able to help many people. And people really matter to God. So Jesus taught that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. But I think sometimes we live in the world as if it does. So perhaps this week we can take the time just to notice. Notice within ourselves when we are operating under the economy of the world and prioritizing based on that economy. When we're making decisions based purely on me and mine and blinkered from those around us and the rest of the world. And then perhaps we can stop and think, what decision would I make in God's economy? What are God's priorities here?